The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 525 on the 6th of July, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Mark Learmonth, CFO at gold producer Caledonia Mining, that's CMCL, and he talks about what they're doing there and also why they've increased the dividend by 22%. Also on the podcast, Arthur Milholland, President and CEO of Canadian Overseas Petroleum, COPL is ticker. Arthur talks about their assets, including their high impact prospect in Liberia, where their partner and operator is ExxonMobil. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Andalas Energy and Power's corporate update today. And I also have today's penny stock with potential, which is Alexander Mining. Now, we've had this before, so I've combined it with a previous post from Assel. This one is from Draft, but they're both good posts, and I've sort of combined them. So that's AXM is the ticker. And I've also got today's broker buys and sells.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Mark Learmonth, CFO, and Maurice Mason, Vice President of Investor Relations and Corporate Development at Caledonia Mining, that's CMCL. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast, guys.
Morning. Thank you very much for having us.
No problem at all. Now, we had a nice release yesterday. We'll get to the release. But first and foremost, for anyone listening who hasn't heard of Caledonia Mining, can you explain what you're all about, please, there?
Mark? Yeah, well, we've got nothing to do with Caledonia at all. Nothing to do with Scotland. We are a Zimbabwean gold producer. We've got a very nice little gold mine in the south of Zimbabwe, which we bought off Kinross in 2006. And we're busy increasing production and investing in that mine and growing it to make more money, make more profit.
And I've got to say, yesterday the share prices reacted nicely to that announcement, and we'll get to that. Just looking at the share price, up over 10%, which is quite nice. So let's talk about the announcement. You've upped the dividend. And so first and foremost, tell us how much you've upped it by and why.
Well, we've increased the dividend by about 22%. So previously we paid 1 1/8 Canadians, US cents a quarter, and we've increased that to 1 3/8 US cents per quarter. So that's a 22% increase. And we're doing that because we can. We're doing it because in 2014 we embarked on a very significant investment program at the Blanket Mine. That's now beginning to bear fruit in terms of increasing production and lower cost, helped by a higher gold price. But I've got to be clear, the higher gold price isn't the reason why we're increasing the dividend. It may have accelerated it a little bit, but fundamentally we're delivering on the plan that we set out in late 2014, and the fruits of that are now beginning to bear fruit. And so, you know, it's time to increase the dividend and let shareholders benefit.
Yeah, and I see you produced 42,800 ounces of gold in 2015, and you're expected to ramp that up, aren't you?
That's right. So this year we'll do about 50,000 ounces, very much back-ended. So the sort of the production progression during 2016 will be about it. We did about 11,000 ounces, just a bit less than that in quarter one. Quarter two, we've said that we'll do about 12,000 ounces, and we'll be putting out a production update probably later on this week, confirming what quarter two actually was. And then we said quarter three would be about 13,000 ounces, quarter four about 14,000 ounces. So a steady progression of production through 2016 to give the total of 50,000 ounces for 2016.
And I see you expect to continue this ramp up. I'm seeing hopefully 80,000 ounces by 2021. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And that results from the primary thing we're doing is sinking a new shaft from surface down to just below a kilometre, and that will allow us to access deeper level resources and fundamentally change the way this mine operates and set it up to operate, you know, for the next sort of 30, 40, 50 years. Significantly, one of the things that we don't factor into our projections is the effect of this central shaft on our operating efficiency, which we actually believe will be quite significant, and will give rise to additional significant operating efficiencies, which will further improve the projected profitability and cash generation.
Yeah, it must be, you know, you're quite a unique company. There aren't many companies on AIM there who turn a profit and pay a dividend.
No, quite right.
And so it's nice to see that. And you mentioned the gold price. And, you know, we are in times of uncertainty. And we've seen gold, hitting 1350 an ounce there. I mean, you said, obviously, it isn't because of that, the dividend increase. But obviously, you must welcome that. And, do you think this will be now the new norm above $1,300?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, I see gold stabilizing somewhere between sort of 1250 and 1400. The global political environment is now less stable than any time I can remember, and looks to be set to remain less stable as we've got the concerns in Europe, as you've got events unfolding in the Middle East, you've got Russia resurgent. And what looks like a potentially quite alarming outcome in North America. So whilst I don't want to sort of be a doom monger or a scaremonger, I think we are looking at an environment which has got much more potential for unforeseen eventualities, which I think it just tends to enhance the position of gold.
Yeah. When it comes to Zimbabwe, I've talked to Steve about this previously. I mean, you know, some people may have reservations there, but you've found no problem doing business there, have you, really?
Not at all. We find Zimbabwe has had a checkered past, and Zimbabwe's own PR is sometimes a little bit checkered. But on a day-to-day basis, we find operating there much more straightforward than certainly south of the border in South Africa. The workforce is outstandingly well qualified, very hardworking, very stable. Government pretty much leaves you alone to get on with the day-to-day business. The big issue I think that faces foreign companies operating in Zimbabwe is the requirement for 51% local ownership. And that's something that we dealt with in September 2012. So having done that, we've put that behind us. And it means that we benefit now from having a very loyal, very engaged workforce. We get support from the community. And the government and our other local partners understand that by growing the business, which we're doing it genuinely for the benefit of all stakeholders, both Caledonia shareholders and our local partners, which actually has borne fruit for us in the last 6 months in Zimbabwe, as they've faced sort of certain challenges relating to liquidity.
Yeah, okay. So what does the rest of the year look like for Caledonia?
There's going to be a steady unfolding of the story that we set in place in late 2014. So, what we report quarterly, as we're still a filer in North America, even though we're now a Jersey company. So, we'll put out our quarter two results in mid-August. Quarter three results will come out in mid-November. And I think you'll expect to see quarter on quarter steadily increasing production, steadily increasing profitability, falling costs, and really what's important is improving cash generation, improving cash flow.
Yeah. And I mean, Steve has been on the podcast and, you know, quite a few times, and he said what's going to happen. It has happened. He stuck to his plan. But, you know, if anyone needs any further convincing, could you give us, please, Mark, three reasons why an investor should put Caledonia Mining on their Vox Markets watch list?
Yeah, well, if you don't need to be a gold bull to buy us. If you do believe that gold is set higher, well, clearly we're an attractive investment opportunity. But frankly, we're just a business that's growing, growing production, growing profitability, and growing our cash flow. We'll pay you a dividend whilst we do that. And I think there's a place for us in a portfolio where you're going to benefit from not only the benefit of the increasing earnings and increasing dividends, but also a potential for a significant improvement in the rating as market perceptions towards Zimbabwe, which are currently somewhat gloomy, as those perceptions turn, you should be able to find a higher PE attaching to higher earnings, which may give rise to a very substantial increase in the overall share price.
Excellent. Marvellous stuff. Well, thank you very much for coming on, and I look forward to chatting to you again in the near future.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is President and Chief Executive Officer of Canadians Overseas Petroleum at COPL. It's Arthur Mulholland. Thanks for joining me, Arthur.
Oh, a pleasure to be here today.
Now, I do, in the interest of transparency, I have to say I do hold a couple of shares in your company there. And at the moment, I'm looking, the share price is 3.25 pence, market cap just under 20 million. So for people not aware of the company, Arthur, can you give us a brief outline as to what you're about there, please?
Well, we're based here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, but as well, we have people in the UK. But our focus is totally on sub-Saharan Africa. We have a deep water exploration project with ExxonMobil as a partner, and as well as an acquisition proceeding along in Nigeria, which is an oil appraisal and development project offshore of Nigeria. So in a nutshell, that's who we are.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's go into a bit more detail on the first one you mentioned there in Liberia. So this partnership with ExxonMobil, for people not aware, ExxonMobil, one of the biggest companies in the world. And so how did this come about, first of all, Arthur?
Yeah, we found this opportunity offshore Liberia in deep water in early 2011. And we put a deal together to acquire the property, and brought ExxonMobil in as a partner later in the year. So for doing that, we're carried for 17% of all costs until Exxon spends $120 million on drilling. Now, that to be said is, up until the point that our carry started, we had invested $25 million in this project. And to date, Exxon has invested a little north of $160 million, and we haven't drilled a well yet. Now, the drilling of that well will happen later this year, and the well planning is well along in progress for that. It was to have the well was to have been drilled 2 years ago, but due to the Ebola epidemic that went through Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, all of the operations in the country had to be shut down. Now, Exxon is operating this. We're not just a passive partner. We are a full technical partner. But that said is that due to the Ebola crisis, they shut their office down in Monrovia, and the current operations are all being run out of the Abidjan and the Ivory Coast. So even if Ebola was to pop its head up here again, in this drilling campaign, they've planned for that, and it's unlikely there'll be any stops in the process. Once we start going down this road of contracting a drill ship and all this, the logistical support, it's pretty tough to pull it back.
Yeah. So it's planned to go ahead, end of this year, maybe start of the next. Is that right?
Well, that's what our disclosure is. And the process is targeting that. For now, that's the time frame that we see. Mm-hmm. The vessel that they've got, the drill ship that they've got identified is currently drilling for them in deep water offshore Nigeria, and when it finishes the current program that it's on, it will come to this project.
Okay.
Now that being said, is that sometimes wells finish earlier and sometimes they finish later.
Yeah.
But it's still under that targeted period.
Okay. And so, what do we know about this prospect here?
Well, it's quite large. It's on what we call the West African Transform Margin. Mm-hmm. It may be one of the largest prospects of this type identified to date, and that's a reason why ExxonMobil is our partner. As you suggested earlier, they are the largest privately held oil and gas company in the world, in other words, excluding state-owned companies. And for prospects to ring ExxonMobil's bell, they have to be big.
Yeah.
And that's why they're involved in this.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And I'm looking at the prospective recoverable resources here on your presentation.
Yes.
So just to explain for people who are not aware, but you've got basically gross P90, that's 1.797 million there, yeah. And net to you, 305. So can you explain what that means, please?
Well, what it means is there's three categories there. Mm-hmm. There's P90, there's P50, and P10. And that would be from an evaluator's belief of what there would be a 90% probability of getting those, or ranging to a 10% probability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
We tend to our rules for in Canada for evaluations suggest that you look at the mid case, which is what they call the best case. Like in other words, they would take all those parameters together. Now, on top of that, there is other risks attached to it as well. So in this case, because we have very compelling seismic data covering this prospect, and it may be some of the highest quality acquired offshore West Africa, and it has indicators on it. We have indicators that strongly suggest the presence of hydrocarbons from the seismic data on this prospect. Mm-hmm. Now, given that the amount of work that's been done on it by our technical team, and ExxonMobil's, our group here, and that between ourselves and our partner, view the risks of this prospect, our risk analysis suggested, has somewhere between a 40 and 50% chance of success. So if you take that number and then apply it to the best case number on the evaluation, which suggests that we would have a net 450 million barrels to us, makes our current share price look and our market cap look very attractive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, even if someone does a bit of a rough maths there, you can times, you know,
yeah,
449, you know, million barrels there.
Exactly.
Even if you make $10 on the barrel, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now, so, go on.
The other thing I should also add on this is that our well carry, in other words, we're carried on all costs, drilling costs, overhead charges, additional seismic until Exxon spends $120 million on drilling. In 2012, when oil was $100 a barrel, that carry may have lasted for just a little bit more than one well. Today is that carry will likely last for two to three wells. So if the first well is successful, you know, we expect our well carry will last us for additional appraisal wells, which means that we're carried further along in the venture than we would have been at high oil prices.
Yeah, yeah. And funding wise, how are you funding this yourself, though?
No, we don't have an obligation to fund any more current expenditures.
Okay.
In this until they finish until they spend $120 million on drilling. So we've got funding for our overheads to run the business, but we're not we're carried by Exxon. We don't have to fund.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I noticed on your presentation there, you said that the technology was presented in ExxonMobil's March 2016 analyst presentation, and it used their Exploration Edge, which is their full waveform inversion. So what is that?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, it's a way of looking at seismic data, and
yeah,
and we have done similar work through a group in the UK whose office is in Tennington, southwest of London. But what it effectively does is takes this, and this is one of their proprietary routines. And what it effectively does is take certain types of seismic data, and it has to be acquired the right way. And for certain types of reservoirs, you can differentiate between oil and water on seismic.
Okay.
Now, we've been able to differentiate between natural gas and water on seismic data since the 1970s. But this is really quite a powerful technique, and it's really only become available, to the industry in the last 10 years, and that's primarily due to the low cost of computing power, right?
Okay, all right. Yeah. If the size of the prize wasn't big enough there, it's not your only horse race here. You've also got joint venture in Nigeria. Can you tell us about the Nigeria project?
Yeah, we have a joint venture with a Nigerian conglomerate that's got various businesses all throughout sub-Saharan Africa, but primarily in Nigeria, ranging from food processing to power generation. And their business is called Shoreline. And Shoreline has just recently become involved in the oil and gas industry in the last 5 years and approached us a little over 2 years ago and looking to do to do new things in the oil and gas business, realizing that we have a very good and well-regarded technical team, which they don't have, and what they bring to the table are the contacts throughout Africa and the ability to get things done, which sometimes if companies are not, let's say, from outside of Africa, the continent, it becomes difficult. Yeah. And to that end, we're just in the process of completing an acquisition, a very nice acquisition of an asset offshore Nigeria that has an oil discovery on it. It appears to be quite large, potentially, and which would be will need to be offset by a well to confirm its size, and that will just take one well. And then, of course, what will follow is a development project. And we wouldn't have been able to get an interest in this without having that joint venture. So it's bearing some fruit.
Okay, well, there's lots going on there. And and I assume for now, is the priority Liberia? Is that the case?
Right now, the priority for any investor looking at this project, it's actually both. Okay. Is that we'll have news flow about the project in Liberia coming along between now and the time that drilling starts to commence. The first information that will flow will be the confirmation of what drill ship that we're going to be using, and that will be in that be coming shortly. Exxon is in the process of renegotiating the drilling contract on it. In other words, it will be a much lower day rate than it is currently on right now. And since the owner of the vessel is a public company, we have to wait till those processes have occurred, because in due course, once the contract is finalized, the owner of the vessel will inform the public markets of the change in contract. As well as we get closer, the actual date of drilling will become, right now there's a wide range of time, and that's just because there's uncertainty, to when the drilling vessel is going to arrive. And as time gets closer, that time of uncertainty will get narrower.
Okay.
So people will in the markets will be able to look at that. We're in the last stages of getting approval on this project in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Once we get approval, we'll be able to release to the market a resource report, or a CPR as you would call it in the UK, showing why we're actually pursuing this project, because I think our shareholders will be quite appreciative of it, and any new shareholder will look at it and say, well, these fellows are actually into something that's continues to be of a magnitude that would be of interest.
Yeah. Well, excellent, Arthur. I think that's enough for new investors or potential investors to get on with. But before we end, if you need to convince them any further, could you give us sort of three reasons in a roundup or a summary as to why potential new investors should add you to their watch list?
Well, I think the reason why is that this team has a history of creating value, and quite extraordinary value. So we've got one of the best technical teams in the industry. We're looking for targets that are, even though they outwardly some appear to be high risk, their risk level is from the exploration targets is not as high as it appears, because we use technology. And the third reason why is because we're active. We're just not a single asset company, and we're not happy with, in other words, just creating a lifestyle from ourselves. All of our employees are shareholders, we all have skin in the game.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, I was just looking at that right now, and I was just looking across your news timeline, your RNS timeline here on Vox Markets, and seeing that you bought a big chunk in it back in February there. So
I did. Yeah, February, yeah. January, and December, and plus I took a large portion of our last financing.
Yeah, so, excellent stuff. Yeah. And so, okay, thanks very much. And just a basic background on yourself there before we go. So, where have you come from to be here, Arthur?
Well, I'm a petroleum geologist by trade. I ran a company called Oil Exco from up until 2008. In 2001, our market cap was around $4 million, and we hit a height of just under $4 billion in 2008. Unfortunately, we were in a development project in the North Sea, and we were renegotiating our credit facility with the Royal Bank of Scotland, and to be signed in late September 2008, and The Royal Bank of Scotland ran out of money, and So did we. So we're very good at finding oil, not very good at picking banks, let alone Scottish banks.
Well, let's be honest, nobody saw that coming, did they? Let's be honest.
No, nobody did. No, and there's lots of other businesses in the UK that were affected by the what happened to RBS and the Bank of Scotland. So
exactly.
So we got caught up in that storm.
Well,
made ourselves.
Yeah. Well, hopefully hopefully we won't see another financial crash in the near future.
No.
You know, hopefully that's a one in a lifetime thing. Hopefully.
Exactly.
Yeah. Marvelous. Well, Arthur, lovely to speak to you. And listen, I look forward to more news. And please come on again very soon.
Look forward to it. And take care. Thanks for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. Here, Al.
I'm good, Justin. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Interesting time in the markets, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah. You know, all the doomsayers and the people that were saying that our market would fall off a cliff after Brexit have been proven wrong. I mean, it's even with all the proverbial rats leaving the so-called sinking ship, you know, the markets have been pretty resilient. We're still where we were or ahead of where we were prior to the Brexit vote. So I find that very encouraging, particularly given that we're in the summer and, of course, volumes are so low.
Well, do you know what? It is sector specific. You know, because I'm looking at the FTSE 250. It's had a hammering. Yesterday it was down 2.2%. And the FTSE 100 was up by 0.3%, I think. And so also today we're getting, you know, the house builders have been hammered.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, banks especially. So there is certain sectors. Like, luckily, the sectors I'm in haven't had a hammering. You know, it's a bit of luck. Like I said, the biggest stocks in the FTSE 100 have been fine. The Royal Dutch Shells, AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
You know, and to a certain extent, Standard Chartered that I'm in the biggest, it's sort of fine because obviously in the far east there. But, you know, I wouldn't have. I did buy Persimmon a while back before Brexit, and I jumped out of it for some reason, which I was lucky to do that because it went from 22 quid down to 16 quid, I think. So, down to 12 quid, actually. So,
yeah.
I've been very lucky in that respect that I haven't, you know, been holding one of the stocks that's had a real tank in. So it's funny, you know, we say that the market's held up well. I'm sure there's some people listening thinking, no, it hasn't. I'm having a hammering, you know.
My portfolio is carnage, yes. Yeah, awful. No, I have to say I'm the same. I mean, I'm sort of overweight in the gas and commodity stocks. I mean, Rio and Shell and BP. And those have all held up very well. Barclays is probably my biggest loser, but then I've averaged down there. I went back in at 139. So, you know, it's still just under my break-even figure. But, you know, I'm happy to hold that because, again, I still go back even pre-Brexit, the CEO, Jez Staley, bought in at £2.50 a share, I think. So, so you know, he's going to be working hard to try and recover his investment as much as anything else. So it is very selective, though. You know, the house builders have taken a pacing. But I had Taylor Wimpey. I bought into Taylor Wimpey a long time ago, and I jumped out of that at the end of last year. So I'm quite glad I did, actually, because obviously there's been a big readjustment in those stocks, although actually the big correction has created some opportunities. And I'm sure once Theresa May gets in, I'm sure she will she will win the mandate and become the new PM. Once she's in and she steadies the ship, then I'm sure we'll see a recovery in those stocks too.
Yeah, and you know, literally looking at the FTSE winners and losers today, and the winners were all miners. So, you know, you've got Fresnillo, you've got Arango Resources, and, you know, all the big sort of miners. And the losers are basically banks, supermarkets, and house builders. You know, so it's those sectors. But, of course, like you said, these house builders, these banks are hammered, will provide opportunities for the future. You know, if you're looking long term, like I'm looking now at, you know, at Bellway and Persimmon, I'm thinking, you know, when is the best time to get it? Is it best to wait a little bit? Because, you know, we don't know if it's going to be a longer term drawdown in the housing market. So, you know, we've yet to hear about that yet. So anyway, all right, so let's move on to individual stocks, smaller cap stocks.
Yep.
What are you looking at, Al?
Well, I had several on the list to look at, but there was an announcement this morning from Andalas Energy and Power. Mm-hmm. Of course, the epicode there is ADL, and I've studied the announcement, and I've done a quick scan around the bulletin boards, and there's some positive stuff and some negative stuff out there. But I have to say, I mean, I generally tend to be a bottle half full investor anyway. But if we just go back to what Andalas Energy and Power are about, there, Andalas Energy and Power farming in to gas and energy projects across the Indonesian region. And of course, there's a massive economy, 250 million people, burgeoning economy, but it's got an old infrastructure. And across the country, there are well-documented shortages in power, power and energy for across the archipelago. And Andalas have gone into the region with David Whitby, who's an expert on the region, the CEO, to create power projects to help solve the country's power problem, and also at the same time, of course, build a business. What was encouraging last month, President Widodo attended the opening of six mobile power plants in the Indonesian archipelago. And his government have endorsed that as the way forward to solve the problem. And of course, the Tuba Roby East concession, once all the permissions come through, is one of those will be one of those operations. David Whitby, the CEO, also said that the country the policy of Andalas is to continue to invest in a series of projects across the region. And of course, they also have the SIAC production sharing agreement, which of course is oil and is an oil field. So they've got exposure to, as we just said, recovering oil price. They're in a region where there is a massive power shortage, and they have the relationships in the region at local government level. They have the technology, and they have the team ready lined up to basically execute on these projects. And obviously, recent history of Andalas hasn't been that positive. There was the fundraising at 2P, which came as a shock to a lot of investors. But the company is now funded to get it over the line, to get the Tuba Roby project underway. There will be further fundraisings in future as additional projects arrive and present themselves. But this is, I believe, at a market cap of just under 4 million, I think we've got a really exciting opportunity to invest into a region where there is a genuine genuinely urgent demand for power across the region that can only be addressed through the implementation of these mobile power plants. So I think investors have to look at what's happened and say, well, the company's now funded. The directors, several senior directors, are also taking their fees going forward in stock as well, which is a good sign. And I think it's very much a ground-up stock. I think we're in a ground level, and it's not going to happen overnight, but I think the next sort of 12 months we'll see this company transform into a significant producer and supplier in the region.
Yeah, well, you know, I've just looked up President Widodo, because I just like the sound of that, you know. It just sounds like a man, you know, in full regalia and full garb there, dressed up with the... But it's basically disappointed me. He's quite a sensible-looking fella, you know, and I was expecting something but outlandish and almost fantastical. But, I mean, you know, it's nice to have a bit of news out from Andalas, because it's been, what, 6 weeks maybe they were on the podcast, I think, last, and it shows they are getting on with things, and the share price has come off a bit, and I think obviously some people were expecting a bit more, but I think it's nice that this is the start of a news flow, and hopefully it's heading in the right direction. And like I said, you know, they put their plans down and they're heading towards achieving those goals, so it's nice there. So I hold a bit of stock. I mean, I gotta say, I'm underwater on them, as is most people, I think.
I hold stock too. I'm also underwater, but I'm I think if investors look back at the RNSs over the past year and look at the plans and the projects, and also there are some news. There are a number of articles from Indonesia covering the power crisis in the region. There's a market there, and I think investors can study the documents, particularly a recent presentation. That was provided by Dave Whitby and the team on the on what Andalas was set up to do and the plans and basically a breakdown of the region, the issues the region's facing, and how Andalas will help solve those problems going forward. And also, you know, the board of Andalas I find encouraging too. You know, you've got Paul Warwick, who's a big industry hitter, who's on the board, and I think, you know, adds real credibility to what the company's trying to do. He clearly sees there's a great opportunity to turn a microcap energy company into a key regional player, and obviously with all the attendant value that's going to deliver.
Yeah, and I think if you look now, if you were not an investor in this company and you looked at this company and the way it's been, you know, hammered the share price and look at what they're trying to achieve, I think you would have this on your watch list. You know, I think this would be a potential investment here that could see, you know, great upside. So, so it's almost a case of ignore now. You know, a lot of people are underwater on this. And to a certain extent, if you want to spin a positive on that, you think, well, most people are not going to sell at this level. You know, most people are going to hold their shares, you know, because, like I said, the potential is there. And so, yeah, I think, you know, definitely still potential there, even though people have been hammered on the share price, as we all know. So it'll be interesting to see the next, I'm sure their next news release will be even more material. And, you know, it'll probably work its way. Like I say, it's not, I know, you know, people in Indonesia say it's not an easy place to work. You have to jump through lots of hoops. But once you start going in and build the trust of the community there, you know, it's pretty much a closed shop. So if you're in there, and Dave came on last time, he did say, you know, we are very entrenched there in the community, and we're very well known. We're getting on with people very well there. We are forming great relationships. So, you know,
that's the thing. And also, there are a number of local people sort of on the team as well. So that's key. You know, they've got local locals there actually as part of the management and the execution team. So you know, I think if you're looking for a project to get in at the ground floor, this is one of the most exciting out there. But clearly, you know, there are risks, as there are with all small cap stocks. But my hope and my belief is that Andalas are over the hump now, and now they're in a position to execute. And the next RNS, as you say, Justin, should be substantial. And we should see some progress.
Yeah, can you do me a favor, Al? Can you give President Widodo a call and get him on the podcast?
Yes, I'll do that.
All right. Cheers, Al.
Cheers, Jess. Okay.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Draft, but I've combined this with a previous submission on this stock by Afsal, because it was very good research as well. So the company is Alexander Mining, AXM. What does the company do? Tech and patents for alternative processes for leaching, improving return on extraction. About 800 million shares in issue. Current market cap is 1.55. Price is 0.18 pence. How much cash or debt does the company have? Worth checking out, because it says here 250K. And in the previous update by Afsal, he says 650K. That was back in April, though. So please do your own research on this. Okay, list three reasons why you think this company has potential. One, they've received notifications that its subsidiary, Metaleach Limited, has been granted a patent in Chile. They have 40 patents granted, more pending, patents including in the countries with the most prospective geology for hosting high acid-consuming metals, including Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Tanzania, Mozambique, Morocco, Peru, South Africa, USA, Mexico, Australia, Congo, and many more. Reason two, potential licensing and royalties with several companies as multinationals, majors, intermediate and junior companies have assessed or are assessing the company's leaching technology, principally for copper, copper cobalt and zinc. Industry recognition of the major commercial value of their technology has been shown by one company making an indicative non-binding proposal to purchase the company's AmLeach technology on an outright basis for its global operations. And reason three, in Australia, the company is waiting to continue discussions with Compass Resources regarding the use of its technology at the Browns Oxide Copper Cobalt Mine. It's also in discussions with another mining company about a possible partnership to investigate these other opportunities. They've also been discussing opportunities for its AmLeach technology with a North American group with good connections in Mexico. A significant number of potential opportunities have been identified, especially for zinc oxide exploitation, and the company looks forward to progressing discussions further definitive license agreement for the Sivas copper mineral property in Turkey. So that's Alexander Technologies, AXM ticker. Check it out. Please do your own research. Okay, here are the broker forecasts, and here are the broker buys. No sells today. Unbelievably. Peel Hunt has initiated coverage of Jules Group. Buy rating, price target 225. Deutsche Bank has initiated coverage of Talk Telecom Group with a buy rating, price target £3. Deutsche Bank also upgraded Vedanta Resources to buy, price target 615. And Canaccord Genuity has upgraded River and Mercantile Group to a buy, price target 235. That's it for the podcast. By all means, get involved. If you know a stock with potential, please go to voxmarkets.co.uk. /blog. Click the link in one of my posts there, and it'll take you through a form. It takes 5 minutes to fill in, and I'll feature it on the next podcast.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.